It's Friday, March 24th, 2017, and the evening shift has just started at Fermoy Garda Station in County Cork. Gardaí Conor Casey and Conor Gately are on duty, preparing for a typical and fairly quiet Friday night. At 7 p.m, a man from Youghal walks in and goes to the public hatch. He seems quiet, reserved. He says his name is Richard Satchwell, and he thinks that his wife, Tina, has left him. Not just that, she's taken €26,000 of their savings. He tells them he's from the seaside town of Youghal, but he's come over to Fermoy because this is where Tina's family lives. He'd thought she was here staying with her family, but he'd just been to visit them and found that none of them had seen her. Richard hasn't seen her for 4 days. He's puzzled but isn't too worried. He's sure she'll turn up soon. He's just thinking that he should let the Gardaí know. He explains that they've had some marriage troubles lately, but perhaps she is just staying at a hotel or a B&B, and she'll soon come to her senses. By the time the officers take down their notes, Richard is saying he's sure she'll return home soon. He won't report her missing. Just yet. When someone is killed in Ireland, the Gardaí call in a specialist unit of forensic crime scene examiners from the Technical Bureau. This is Ireland's real-life version of CSI, but it's nothing like the movies or TV shows. For 25 years, I was one of the detectives on that team. My name is John Sweetman. My job as a Garda detective in the Technical Bureau was to read the evidence that could not speak for itself. I learned to see what others might miss. Fingerprints smudged on a handle of a door. Weapons disguised in everyday objects. Handwritten notes that revealed more than the writer ever intended. The smallest traces often unraveled the big story. And now, I'm here to tell you those stories. In this podcast from Go Loud, I take you inside some of Ireland's most haunting investigations. This is Lines of Inquiry, a Go Loud original podcast that follows the evidence step by step and tries to uncover the real stories behind the headlines. In this episode, we look at a case that gripped the nation for over 6 years. A husband desperate for his wife to come home, pleading with Gardaí for help in finding her. What followed would leave a lasting mark on those involved and on the country as a whole. This is the case of Tina Satchwell. A calculated mystery. The N25 from Youghal up to Carrigtuil was always a quiet drive on Sunday mornings. Without the weekday commuters, Richard and Tina Satchwell could make the trip to Carrigtuil in 25 to 30 minutes, easy. As they did most weekends, on the morning of Sunday, the 19th of March 2017, Richard and Tina visited the car boot sales. Some days, they spread out their tarpaulin and sold things. Other days, they just wandered around, enjoying their own hunt for bargains. Tina was the expert rummager, especially for new pieces for her wardrobe, and was well known for her fashion sense. She was always asking other women about what they were wearing, or where they got a piece of clothing from. She'd often wear things for a while, then resell them later to earn money, because Richard's income as a lorry driver wasn't always steady. At Carrigtuil that day, by the time they stopped to chat with a couple they knew from the circuit, Tina had already bought a black jacket and designer perfume. The woman knew Tina, as they had both grown up in Fermoy. They chatted about the day and what bargains they'd found. The couple complimented Tina on what she'd bought, and joked that she must have been meeting a man later that night. Tina laughed and told them there was only one man for her. That evening at home, they made pizza and chips, as they often did on a Sunday, and saved the leftovers for the following night. Richard was 50, and Tina was 44. They didn't have children, but their animals were their family. Jack Russell Terrier Heidi, Chihuahua Ruby, and an Amazon parrot named Valentine. It was a house of five, really, and Tina was rarely seen without her dogs by her side. Apart from doing car boot sales, Tina wasn't working, and the following day, Richard wasn't working either. So it was set to be a quiet week in the Satchwell household. 5 days later, on Friday, March 24th, Richard drove 40 miles from Yall to Fermoy to visit some of Tina's family. He made the trip to check if Tina was there. He hadn't seen her since Monday, and he assumed she'd gone to stay with them. Richard thought he should give her space, but by Friday he thought he'd better drive to Fermoy and see if she was ready to come home. It was then that Richard decided to drop into Fermoy Garda Station. He said that on the Monday morning just gone, the day after going to the car boot sale, he'd gone upstairs and given Tina a cup of tea and breakfast. He said everything seemed normal. She then asked him to go to Aldi in Dungarvan to get some fish and some parrot food for Valentine, and stop by the church to light a candle for their other parrot, Pearl, who had recently died. He said he left the house between 10 a.m. and 10:30 a.m. and did just that. Then, when he came home around midday, Tina wasn't there. Her keys were on the floor near the front door, and her phone was on the kitchen table. He found the dogs in the living room, which was strange because she wouldn't normally leave the house without them. So, assuming she hadn't gone far, he waited around an hour and then went to look a bit more upstairs. That's when he saw two suitcases were missing, and so was the money box they kept hidden in the attic. A box with 26,000 euros of the couple's savings in it. He explained that the money was from the proceeds of the sale of their house in Fermoy the year before, as well as the car boot sales they had been doing. He felt she must have needed time and had gone to Fermoy, but as the days went on and he hadn't heard from her, he thought he'd better go to Fermoy himself. Richard didn't seem too emotional or concerned, and he said his wife must have been staying nearby in a B&B or hotel, and that she'd come home soon. The Gardaí took the details and they left it for the time being as a possible marriage separation. Tina and Richard met in England in 1989, when Richard was 22 and Tina was 17. Tina had left Fermoy to live with her sister, Teresa, in England. She had moved earlier to join their grandmother in the town of Colville, near Leicester. The pair had been very close their whole lives, but in her childhood, Tina discovered a difficult secret. The young Tina had found her birth certificate. The name listed as her mother was not who she thought, and had always been told was her mother. It was one of her older sisters. She then learned that the person she thought was her mother was her grandmother. Her five older sisters and three brothers were her aunts and uncles. It was a shock. It rearranged her whole idea of her life. When Tina was born as Tina Dingivan on November 30, 1972, in St. Bernard's Place, Fermoy, County Cork, she was raised by her grandparents. She had a happy childhood with a loving family and friends. She was free-spirited, living in a close-knit area of neat terraces. The kids would play outside every day, watching stray cats come into their yard for food, where they kept a donkey. Even after discovering her birth mother was actually her sister, Tina continued to treat her grandmother as her mother. But the pain lingered. In England, at age 17, Tina met Richard, then aged 22, who was staying with his brother a few doors down from her. When he met Tina, Richard told his brother it was love at first sight, and he would marry her one day. He loved her confidence, the way she looked, the way she walked. He said he just loved everything about her. On November 30th, 1991, they married in Oldham, England. It was Tina's 20th birthday. By 1993, They had left England to return to Cork, spending their first 20 years of marriage in Tina's hometown, Fermoy, close to her family. In 2016, they bought their three-story terraced home on Grattan Street, right next to Yall Harbour. Although Richard was reserved and not as social, Tina remained close with her family and would visit them a few times a week. She'd chat with old neighbours and feed the birds in her uncle's garden. So, when Richard thought about where she had possibly gone, it was the most logical place. Sometime over the following few weeks, Fermoy Gardaí passed Tina's information over to the Gardaí at Yall. At the time, it was labelled a casual inquiry, as Richard hadn't reported Tina missing. But they felt it warranted a follow-up. It was handed over to Sergeant John Sharkey and Garda Thomas Keane. Initially, they followed up with Richard on the basis he was waiting for Tina to return home. A month had passed, and Garda Keane dropped by Grattan Street to see if Richard had heard from her. There was no answer. A few days later, Garda Keane returned, and Richard answered the door. He still hadn't heard from Tina, but he said he really wasn't concerned for her well-being or safety. He was sure she'd just left him and would come home eventually. Garda Keane told him he needed to file a formal missing persons report, and a couple of days later, he did. Richard retold the story and described the month or so since Tina's disappearance. He said the first few days were a bit of a blur. He said the Friday that he'd gone to Fermoy to see if he could find her, he'd also had an appointment to see a doctor in the same town, and that's when he went around to her family and then the local Gardaí. In the days and weeks after that, he contacted other relatives in England and Killarney, and he went around different car boot sales looking for her. But there was no sign. Nobody had seen Tina. Yall Gardaí upgraded Tina's case to a formal missing persons investigation. They started looking for leads, and Richard gave them photographs to use in the media, agreeing to help with any appeals or anything they needed. An appeal went out to the public for any information. Tina was described as blonde and petite, at around 5'4" or 5", and weighing approximately 8 stone. Gardaí said they believe she left the house that morning on foot. Sergeant John Sharkey's team went house to house in the towns of Yall and Fermoy and interviewed Tina's family. They did extensive searches around Yall and the wider East Cork area throughout May of 2017, but nothing showed up. They monitored Tina's phone records and bank accounts in case there was any unusual activity, but they found no activity at all. On May 14th, Garda Aidan Davis asked Richard to come in to give a formal statement. He thought perhaps there were some details that had been missed. Richard talked more about their relationship and revealed that Tina sometimes had unpredictable behaviour and it had been affecting their marriage for some time. He said he was known as the shy one and that she wore the trousers in the relationship. He said he was a bit of a walkover. He described her as a different person behind closed doors. He said she would have mood swings, that she had a short fuse that could lead to violent outbursts where she sometimes hit him. He said it could happen a few times a week, but that a few times a year, it got really bad. Richard said he believed she might have undiagnosed depression or a mental health condition. She had lost a brother to suicide in 2012. And she had deteriorated since then. But he said she was no danger to herself because he felt she was too vain. She was too in love with herself for that, he said. Richard told Garda Davis that he and Tina were driving to Middleton the week before she went missing when she got angry out of nowhere, telling him that she'd wasted 28 years with him. When asked if Richard ever hit her back, he said he'd never lay a hand on her, but sometimes was given no option other than to hold her back. He put up with it over the years because he thought she was in pain. When asked about the money, Richard said he was now convinced she took the money to start a new life without him somewhere else. He said she wasn't a bad person, and he didn't want to paint her as if she was. He just wanted to know she was safe and sound. He also said that she was his whole world, and he had given up his family for her. His English family didn't approve of him marrying an Irish girl, and not one member of his family turned up to their wedding. In fact, he hadn't had a relationship with his family since. He became so disconnected that it took 6 months for him to find out his own mother had died. Despite all this, he didn't believe their marriage was over, and he was sure she'd be back. By now it had been a couple of months since Tina had disappeared. Sergeant Sharkey called around a number of businesses, hoping they might still have CCTV footage from March. Most places didn't keep their footage that long, but he felt it was worth a try. To Sergeant Sharkey's surprise, the All Post Office had footage from inside the shop, and he got the tape from between 9 a.m. and 2 p.m. on March 20th. While looking through the grainy footage, instead of seeing Tina, the team saw Richard approach the counter. The timestamp on the footage was 11:13 a.m., the time Richard said he was in Dungarvan. Reviewing the footage again, something else stuck out. He had something else with him. The dogs. Gardaí kept the CCTV footage to themselves, while they chased every other lead into the ground. They made inquiries with Interpol, the ports, airports, taxi companies, and the passport office. A search of CCTV covered Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland as part of a joint effort between Gardaí and the PSNI. There was no sign that Tina had left the country. They searched Yall Bay, the coastline and the sea. Appeals brought in 60 reported sightings of Tina in Ireland and abroad. Each led nowhere. By the start of June, every road was a dead end. Sergeant Sharkey and the team formed the opinion that something untoward had happened to Tina. They believed something criminal may have occurred. With no other way to turn, Sergeant Sharkey got a warrant to search Richard and Tina's house. At 7 a.m. on June 7, 2017, Sergeant Sharkey and around 10 Gardaí pulled into a silent Grattan Street. Richard wasn't at home at number 3. He was away on a job, but had happily told Gardaí to get a locksmith to get into the property. He knew they had a warrant, on the basis that there had been an assault causing harm to Tina. Gardaí found a modest 3-story semi-detached home, 2 rooms on each level and a rear yard. Inside, every room was cluttered with mess and rubbish. In the living area, they found dog feces on the floor and a dirty, unkempt birdcage. In the kitchen, unwashed dishes were still in the sink. In one room upstairs, they found hundreds of items of clothing hanging on rails. There were several parts of the home where Richard had been doing his own repairs and remodeling that looked half-finished. The stairs were made of relatively new, unpainted wood, and there was an unfinished wall to the side of the stairs with new plasterboard. The interior storage space under the stairs looked partly done, and like everything else, it looked messy and unprofessional. But they knew Richard and Tina had been doing bits and pieces to the house themselves since they bought it, and since she'd gone, Richard had been keeping himself busy with repairs. On the whole, it just looked like he wasn't keeping the house in the sort of order it probably was before. A forensic scientist searched the house for any traces of blood. He examined the stairs, hallways and landings of the house, using a chemical called Blue Star. But he found no blood. They took Richard's laptop and some paperwork, anything that might lead to discovering Tina's whereabouts. Then, after 12 hours and nothing else found, the search ended. When Richard returned the following day, he voluntarily visited Middleton Garda Station. Gardaí asked him to come in to discuss some of the paperwork found at the house. Richard talked again about their relationship, and how he felt that Tina had left him to start a new life. He said that during two of Tina's violent outbursts, she had knocked him out cold. Again, he said how much he loved her and was obsessed with her, despite how she sometimes treated him. Despite a dysfunctional childhood, Richard still thought she was the perfect person, and he had come to understand her dark side. He said he wanted children, but she didn't. Gardaí asked about some Western Union money transfers that had been sent to various places around the world. Transfers for thousands of euros. Richard explained that he and Tina had been trying to adopt two marmoset monkeys. They'd paid the money, but the company said they hadn't received it and wouldn't send the monkeys. He said if they wanted to search the emails on the laptop, they'd find an email explaining everything. Richard said he was worried all the media and publicity might be discouraging Tina from returning. He thought she might fear being ridiculed. Three more weeks passed, and still no word from Tina. Richard joined Tina's aunt on RTE's crime call to make an appeal for information. Richard, directly to the camera, said, "Tina, come home. No one's mad at you. My arms are open. The pets are missing you like crazy. We just want and need you back. I just can't go on not knowing. Even if you just ring the guards, let people know that you are all right." He broke down in tears. Over the next month, Richard and members of Tina's family, including her sister and aunt, made more media appeals for information on TV, radio, and in the papers. Richard had realized people suspected him, so he started to use the media appearances to clear his name. "One day my wife will turn back up, or she will get in touch with the Gardaí. One way or another, it would all come out and in time will prove I've done nothing wrong." Privately, Tina's family were extremely worried. Richard had been saying publicly that Tina was violent and abusive, that she had an undiagnosed mental health condition. It wasn't the Tina they knew. During the second half of 2017, the appeals continued, and Gardaí began large-scale targeted searches in the Yall area. In August, they searched the harbour at low tide, using search dogs and the Garda Water Unit, as well as the Irish Coast Guard and the Army. They found nothing. Richard got in touch with Gardaí after finding two suitcases by the clothes bank in the Yall Tesco car park. Gardaí took them for DNA testing, but would soon find they had no connection to Tina. On November 30th, the day that would have been both their 26th wedding anniversary and Tina's 45th birthday, Richard made an emotional plea for Tina to come home for Christmas, telling TV3 News, "This Christmas, if she is not here, there won't be any Christmas for me." He shared a photo of Tina from the previous Christmas with one of the dogs. In the same interview, he said that since moving to Yall, every night we would walk from the house up to the lighthouse, where we would stop and stand at the railings. I would stand behind Tina, hugging her close, looking out to sea. That first Christmas came and went, and the early weeks of 2018 were quiet, as investigators wrapped up 220 lines of inquiry. Richard invited Barry Cummins and his team from RTE's Prime Time Investigates to visit his home for a special interview and another appeal they called Tina Satchwell, The Missing Year. When it aired, Ireland looked on as Richard showed Cummins around the house. At one point, Cummins drove Richard around for Moy and Yall, showing him locations like the spot where he proposed in 1989. Tina's photos and belongings were on display all over the house. The jacket she bought at the car boot sale the day before she disappeared hung on a hanger behind the sofa. Tina's nail polish bottles lined in a shelf, covered in almost a year of dust. Richard showed the camera a bottle of cava he had out on display, leaning inside one of Tina's red high heels. He told Cummins he had bought it for their 2016 wedding anniversary and wouldn't open it until she returned. When Cummins asked Richard if he had a message for his wife, Richard said, "I want you to get in touch. I believe somebody is out there that does know where she is, because she didn't get up and leave without some help from somebody." He said he believed that if someone tried attacking Tina, she would pick the nearest thing up and whack them with it. She wouldn't be a pushover. Off the back of the program, someone phoned Gardaí with a credible tip. The caller believed they'd seen a woman matching Tina's description just after Tina's disappearance. She was near Mitchell's Wood, 20 minutes from Yall. The caller said they saw the blonde woman enter the woodland area near the luxurious Castle Marta resort with a man, who later returned himself, but she never did. So, on March 4th, 2018, 60 officers descended on the area around Mitchell's Wood. 100 metres of steel security fencing and plastic cladding was built around a cordoned-off area. Generators were delivered to the scene with outdoor lighting systems, porta-cabins for officers, portable toilets, and a special Garda communications vehicle. Superintendent Colm Noonan of Middleton Garda Station issued a public appeal for information as the massive search operation began. And although Gardaí refused to comment publicly about the tip-off, they confirmed that it was highly credible. Searchers combed through the thick scrub and dense ivy that covered the ground and trees. They used sticks to poke through dense woodland. A few days into the search, Richard spoke with TV3 News from near the search site. When asked what was going through his mind, he said, "The possibility, no matter how small, that my wife could be behind them barriers." He said, "I am not a religious man, but at night, I am having a little prayer that everything as regards this just turns up nothing. I feel sick. I felt sick driving down here from Yall, and I know it is only a short distance." He said he'd seen the area from the road, but he'd never been there before. Gardaí found remnants of clothing, along with various other items that were sent for forensic testing. But in the end, the 12-day search got them no closer to finding Tina. The interviews continued through 2018 in a similar fashion. Richard discussed her undiagnosed depression and refusal to take antidepressants, and his promise never to make her. He would praise her, then talk about her temper, saying how she would hit him and then would cry. He revealed to TV3 that he had been to jail in the past, having been charged for working while claiming the dole. He spent a month in Cork jail from December 2003 to January 2004. He said he felt alienated in his community. He claimed no one ever said anything to him, but if he walked into a shop, everyone would stand still. Tina was the one that was outgoing. He admitted that when Gardaí searched his house, he felt a bit like a suspect, but he'd never been called in under caution. Following the search at Mitchell's Wood, the investigation into Tina's disappearance plateaued. Richard withdrew from the media after accusing them of twisting his words. He began to turn down requests and faded from the public eye. He stopped going out as much and concentrated on his renovation jobs at home. On the 2-year anniversary of her disappearance, Gardaí issued another appeal for information, and Tina's sister spoke out about never giving up hope of finding her. It would be another year before anything moved on the case. In March 2020, on the 3rd anniversary, Gardaí announced they were conducting a peer review of the previous investigation. They would revisit the 370 separate lines of inquiry to date and review more than 100 hours of CCTV footage, 170 statements, as well as all the evidence. They would re-interview witnesses and Richard Satchwell. In the summer of 2021, 4 years and 5 months after Tina's disappearance, a cold case review was finally underway. Very quickly, the case shifted gears and went in a new direction. It had new energy. The new team got warrants to search all emails and text messages from the devices taken from Satchel's home in 2017. Detective Sergeant David Noonan was brought on specifically because of his experience and expertise in advanced interviewing techniques. He focused on all the statements given by Richard over the 4 years prior and any discrepancies that had come to light. Detective Sergeant Noonan then called Richard Satchel in for an interview, under the guise that a new review was taking place into the investigation of Tina's disappearance. He then conducted what is known as an enhanced cognitive interview, a witness-led and specifically non-confrontational interview, allowing Richard to be in control of the narrative, while giving Noonan maximum forensic detail. It was also deliberately held away from any Garda station. The interview lasted 4 hours. Noonan said that every detail was important, even things that may seem insignificant, and that Richard should assume Noonan knew absolutely nothing about the case. Richard said that he and Tina would talk about anything and everything, and would often sit up all night and chat. All that changed in 2012, when her brother took his own life, and it really affected her. She became depressed, angry, distant. Over the last 15 years they spent together, Richard said Tina threatened to leave him up to 300 times. When their parrot, Pearl, died, it was like Tina lost a child and they had an autopsy done to understand what had happened. She became more violent, but he thought things would change once they moved to Yall. But it didn't. He said she could be nasty 1 minute and then act like nothing had happened the next. He described a bad spell in 1995, claiming it was so bad he tried to take his own life with an entire box of sleeping tablets. He said he never told anyone. Noonan encouraged Richard to go into excruciating detail about their lives and their day-to-day habits. He described their Sunday night ritual as getting 2 pizzas and him running Tina a bath with as many suds as possible. He did this the night before she disappeared. He said it was like a 7-day-a-week job for him, all at her request. That night was Sunday, so that meant taking the polish off her toes while she soaked in the tub. He described toweling her off after her bath, which was the closest to physical contact they'd had in years. He remembered she had painted her nails with a bottle of red glitter nail polish. He was consistent in his description of nearly all of the morning Tina disappeared. Leaving for Dungarvan by 10 a.m. or 10:30 a.m, shopping, coming home to find the dogs home alone. But there was one detail that had changed. This time, instead of saying he had made Tina tea and breakfast in bed, he said he got up early and was doing household chores by 5:45 a.m. Then Tina got up and did chores as well while he prepared breakfast just before 9 a.m. He described crying on the evening he discovered Tina had left him, while their dog Heidi licked up his tears. When discussing what he thought had happened to her, Richard was steadfast. He believed she was still out there and no harm had come to her. He said he expected one of 2 things was going to happen. She would just knock at a friend's house, probably with another man, or a registered letter would arrive, demanding that he sell their house. When the team reviewed Noonan's interview, they saw just how many of Richard's details didn't match what their investigation had found. In all of the Gardaí's interviews of people who knew Tina, not one person had said anything about Tina being controlling, or depressed, or prone to outbursts or violent rages. No one ever saw Richard with injuries, or Tina being nasty to him. But nearly everyone described Richard as controlling or strange, and Tina as kind and happily in love. The review team spent 3 months scrutinizing the emails and text messages from 2 laptops and a mobile phone that was seized during the original 2017 search of the home. They were interested in the remark Richard had made during the cognitive interview about the money transfers and emails about adopting monkeys. They found that, For roughly 2 years via email and text, Richard had been trying to adopt or buy two marmoset monkeys from someone who called themselves Mr. James. And the payments did match his story, but not entirely. Around a month before Tina vanished, Richard received an email from the International Monkey Rescue Organization about adopting these monkeys. The organization had repeatedly claimed that there were issues or difficulties with the funds. Essentially, Richard had paid thousands of euros for the monkeys, but had never received them, and they kept telling him his payments never cleared and that he needed to keep paying. On March 19th, the day before Tina vanished, Richard received an email that said, "You never took our last message seriously." Then, the following morning, the day Tina disappeared, they emailed Richard again, saying they were still working on how to get the rest of the amount. Richard emailed back, "What do you mean by this? I've been putting a lot of time on this, and my wife is saying she is going to leave me over this." Looking at the time recorded for the email, Detective Garda Kelleher realized the email was sent by Richard at 10:42 a.m., 12 minutes later than the latest time Richard said he had left the house that morning. 4 minutes later, he texted Mr. James from his phone while it was in Yall. "Hello, Mr. James. I am in a mess right now because my wife has said she is leaving me over this. So please let the organization know this. Richard." Later that day, he texted various family members to say Tina had left him and taken their money. In one, he claimed her birth and marriage certificates were gone. The text Richard sent to Mr. James put him in Yall at 10:46 a.m. The CCTV showed him at the Yall post office at 11:13 a.m. Location data showed his own phone returned home at around 11:20 a.m. and stayed in the house until 12:50 p.m. CCTV then captured him finally arriving at Aldi in Dungarvan at 1:10 p.m. and his phone was found to arrive back at their home at 2:47 p.m. Gardaí believed the visit to Aldi was not for parrot food at all. They believed that on the morning of March the 20th, 2017, Richard and Tina got into an argument, possibly about Richard being scammed and further in debt over the monkeys. Tina may have said she was planning to leave, but Richard wasn't going to let that happen. They looked through his internet history. On Friday, March 24th, 2017, the day he drove to Fermoy to look for Tina and first spoke to the Gardaí about her leaving, he had been doing some internet research at home. He googled the word quicklime, then watched a video twice that showed quicklime reacting with water. Although quicklime is used as a building material, a kind of mortar powder, historically it was also used as a practical aid in reducing the odour of decomposing bodies and discouraging scavengers. By the middle of 2021, Richard Satchwell was their number one suspect. They felt they had reasonable grounds to believe that Tina was not a missing person and had met her death through unlawful means. But the evidence wasn't enough for an arrest. If they searched his home again, they needed to tear it apart, but they hadn't met the legal threshold for a warrant to do that. Gardaí needed to demonstrate reasonable grounds that not only had a crime been committed, but they needed to prove that evidence was physically inside 3 Grattan Street. In February 2022, as the 5-year anniversary approached, Tina's family said their hopes of ever finding her alive were fading. For the first time in a long while, Richard spoke to the press again, pleading for information. At one point, he addressed Tina directly. "And to Tina herself, get in touch, because at this point in time I only have one big question, which is why? But I'm still willing to sit down and talk things through." Gardaí commissioned a forensic anthropologist, Dr. Niamh McCullough, to conduct a review of the evidence. She was a specialist in the search and recovery of human remains concealed in a criminal context. While the review took place, Richard Satchwell had no idea the net was tightening around him. He was brought in to read and sign the 120-page transcript of the enhanced cognitive interview he had done earlier. To him, he was helping Tina's missing persons case. But in Garda eyes, he was signing off on a detailed string of lies they had already proven to be untrue. The review team compiled their case and prepared for what they hoped would be the final piece they needed. In March 2023, like every year for the last 6 years, Gardaí renewed their appeal for the public's help. Although they had a different timeline now of the morning Tina went missing, they kept up the false narrative that Richard had given them. They kept him thinking that they still believed his alibi. Dr. Niamh McCullough, the forensic archaeologist, completed her report in September of that year. She outlined three possible scenarios. One being that Tina had been killed at her home address and her body concealed there, and that the first search of the house was not invasive enough. Her recommendation was that a more invasive search should take place, to look into the renovations and structural changes to the property. She recommended that this specifically include the plasterboard, stairs, and the ground floor of the sitting room. Her last recommendation was that the search include a cadaver dog to determine the possibility of buried remains. The report provided the team with the specific forensic rationale they needed to get a warrant to properly search Satchwell's home. It also pushed the missing persons investigation officially into a murder investigation. At 5 p.m. on October 10th, 2023, Detective Inspector Anne-Marie Toomey and Detective Garda Dave Kelleher approached the front door of number 3 Grattan Street. They had timed it to surprise Richard after work. Detective Inspector Toomey introduced herself to Richard Satchwell. She had both a warrant for an intrusive search of the property, as well as a warrant for his arrest. Detective Garda Kelleher then stepped forward to formally arrest and caution Richard on suspicion of murder. He was taken to Cove Garda Station. Then, dozens of Gardaí, the technical bureau, and excavation teams with heavy machinery filed onto the Satchwell property. The teams had 24 hours to find incriminating evidence and charge Richard, or they would have to let him go. The home was cordoned off and sealed with black tarpaulin. Two search teams divided the property. The first team covered the inside of the house and a patio Satchwell had laid the concrete for himself. The second area was the backyard, where the team cleared undergrowth and trees from an adjoining property using chainsaws. Digging equipment and concrete saws were brought in as they concentrated on clearing and digging up the back of the property. Inside the house, it was obvious that since the 2017 search, Richard Satchwell had continued to work on renovations. He'd built a kitchen extension, which the team planned to demolish. Other parts of the house remained unchanged. The stairs were still uncarpeted, with exposed untreated wood, and there was still raw plasterboard on the side where he'd built the understairs cupboard. The team cleared rubbish and items into a skip outside. Inside, investigators stood near the red brick wall that ran along the side of the staircase. It formed part of an enclosed cupboard built underneath the stairs. It was there in 2017, but at the time, there was a sofa pushed up against it, and investigators didn't fully see it. This time, they noticed how out of place the wall looked. It was shabby and not made very well. There was also a new addition sitting prominently in the sitting room near the stairs. A small table, cluttered with photos of Tina with various pets. In one, she was with Pearl, her parrot that had died, and in another, Heidi, the terrier. Amongst the mementos sat a small varnished miniature wooden casket with brass-coloured hinges and a metal plaque engraved with Heidi's name. Tina's dog Heidi had died the year before, and Richard had created a shrine, complete with a miniature coffin. Behind the photos was a certificate that said, "Heidi, cremated with the utmost care and respect. By 7 p.m, Alan Ward, a specialised victim recovery search dog handler from the PSNI, arrived with a Springer Spaniel called Fern. Ward removed Valentine the parrot and Ruby the dog before taking Fern through the house. As Fern reached the stairs, she became extremely active, indicating she was working a specific scent. As Fern's sniffing became more rapid, her muscles became visibly tense. She refused to leave the stairs area, even when Ward asked her to move on. After they moved the furniture and a cement mixer from in front of the brick wall, it seemed that Fern wasn't able to reach the exact source of the scent that she was tracking. While Gardaí continued their search at Grattan Street, Detective Sergeant David Noonan had begun his interrogation of Richard Satchwell at Cove Garda Station. This time, unlike their previous interview, Noonan wasn't letting Richard believe that he was in charge. This time he would use what was called the challenge technique. He said they would tear apart every inch of the house until they found something. This time, they made it clear that the story he had been telling all these years was about to come apart. Richard doubled down on his story. By the following morning, Noonan continued. He pulled out photos and footage that was happening in real time. Investigators examining the staircase and the shoddy renovations that he'd done. Noonan told him they were about to go into the walls. He showed footage of officers dismantling the cupboard that had been built under the stairs. Then it was photos of the brickwork inside the cupboard, with hardened drips of mortar around the bricks. Noonan asked what was in there, and Richard said, "Bits and pieces." Back in 2021, during Noonan's four-hour interview, he'd asked about the bricks and the stair area. Richard had named a local builder who he said had done the renovations. Noonan told him that the stories he had told of his life and the events surrounding Tina's disappearance were very different from the evidence they had gathered. Noonan said they'd followed up with the builder he had mentioned. The builder told Gardaí he'd never done any work at the Satchwell home. Satchwell said he didn't want to call people liars, but they were all mistaken. Back at the house, at the spot Fern the search dog had highlighted, they attempted to use ground-penetrating radar, but couldn't get any results. As the 24-hour mark arrived, they hadn't found anything to link Richard to Tina's murder. And at 5 p.m, they were forced to release him to a hotel in Yall. Still with a warrant to continue the search, Detective Garda Brian Barry of the Technical Bureau and the contractors assessed the cupboard under the stairs. They set up lights, cleared the mess, and ripped up a piece of old 70s lino that covered the ground. They pulled it back to find a concrete floor. It wasn't until the light shone down on the floor that they saw. There were two different colours of cements used on the ground. There had been two separate jobs. One of the concrete colours was in a rectangle shape. The builders used Kango hammers to break through the concrete. Soon they hit sandy soil. Then they dug down to a depth of around 60 centimetres before their tools hit something new. Black plastic. Fern was brought back to the hole. She didn't bark or dig around. She went into full freeze mode. She was telling them that human remains were inside the plastic. Just after 9 p.m, Detective Garda Barry shut down the operation, cordoned off the area, and called the forensic archaeologists. Gardaí stood guard over the stairs and the body that lay beneath it that night, to ensure no evidence was disturbed. By daybreak, the house search had become a forensic recovery. When the archaeological team arrived at Grattan Street that morning, the mood was somber. Cupboards and walls had been torn apart and skips had been filled. But knowing they'd found a clandestine grave had shocked every person involved. Because of the confined space and the plastic sheeting being buried beneath a huge amount of soil, The process was slow and highly technical. Forensic archaeologist and bone expert Dr. Niamh McCullough led the excavation. Forensic anthropologist Laureen Buckley was there to analyse any bones in situ, should they be found, and to help identify their placement and condition. Assistant state pathologist Dr. Margot Bolster would perform any medical examinations and prepare for an autopsy. Irregularities in the soil revealed a rectangular-shaped grave, approximately 3 foot by 6 foot. Each bucket of soil removed was carefully sifted and any evidence collected. Dr. McCullough used hand tools and brushes to clear the soil around the plastic, layer by layer. She moved with absolute precision, careful not to accidentally disturb anything that might be of evidential value. Using a scalpel, she carefully made a cut in the heavy-duty black plastic. As the light shone down into the pit, they could see what lay inside. Tissue and bone. As she continued to brush away the soil, cutting and folding back more of the plastic, there it was. A human hand inside fluffy pink and purple polka dot fabric. And, bit by bit, the layers of the grave revealed the full remains of Tina Satchwell. She was wrapped in a blanket and black plastic, tied with duct tape, wearing tartan pajamas and a dressing gown. She was lying face down, her legs folded over to one side. Up the road, Detective Garda Dave Kelleher, dressed in plain clothes, pulled up to a bus stop opposite Richard's Hotel. He was standing waiting for the bus and didn't seem surprised to see Kelleher. He was then arrested for the second time in 2 days. When he is told that they had found Tina's remains buried under his staircase, he said, "I talked to that piece of ground for years." Back at Grattan Street, the forensics team notified the coroner, and Tina's remains were painstakingly removed from the ground. Gardaí invited Yall Parish priest Father Bill Birmingham to the house to say prayers as they brought Tina out. Late that afternoon, around 50 locals and media watched in complete silence as Tina's remains came out of the house. Undertakers, under Garda escort, took her to the mortuary at Cork University Hospital for a post-mortem. Father Birmingham stood on the pavement and gave a short blessing and recited prayers. Later he said how emotional he felt seeing her remains removed and didn't feel she'd been afforded the dignity or respect she deserved in death. He said he was there so she wouldn't be leaving her home alone, as just another piece of evidence. He said, "She is now no longer a missing person. She is a person who has been found, and we can now care for her." He urged the community to support one another, and as soon as the cars had left, people began leaving flowers and messages at the house. Tina's post-mortem showed no fractures to any bones, and due to the advanced state of decomposition, no other injuries could be found. It meant that they were not able to confirm a cause of death. Although the remains gave no clue as to the date Tina had died, while sifting through the soil from Tina's grave, something else gave a clue. A food label with a "Best Before July 2017" sticker was found. 15 fragments of toughened residential glass were found in Tina's hair and scalp. It didn't match any glass found at the house, but was the type that external doors and coffee tables were made of. The glass was an indication that Tina may have hit her head on some sort of tough glass. Her dressing gown was also wrapped in an unusual way around her body, tied up around her chest in a knot, possibly as a way to carry or drag her body. In the dressing gown pockets, they found a purse with her loyalty and ID cards. Sergeant Noonan was once again interviewing Richard Satchwell. This time, Noonan made it crystal clear that the story of Tina having run off to start a new life with all of their savings had completely fallen apart. There was no getting out of this. Then something unexpected happened. Richard Satchwell changed the story he'd been telling for 6 years. This time, he said that on the morning of March 20th, 2017, he got up and was doing some plumbing work on a washing machine in his shed. At around 9 a.m, he went into the house to find Tina at the bottom of the stairs in her dressing gown, with a chisel in her hand. She was leaning down and scraping the plasterboard that he'd put up. He said he asked her what she was doing, and she flew at him in a rage and tried to stab him with the chisel. He lost his footing, falling backwards with her on top of him. She then started trying to stab him in the head with the chisel. He said that it was the first time he fought back against her. He took her dressing gown belt from her waist. He pulled it towards him and then up towards her to fend her off. He said as her weight bore down on him, he held the belt for a minute or two across her neck. Then she got heavier. She went limp. It wasn't until he let go and she fell into his arms that he realized she was dead. He said he held her for 20 to 30 minutes after realizing she was gone. His story continued on and on in detail. Noonan didn't tell him that they'd found no sign of injury to her hyoid bone, the bone that would typically be damaged in a case of manual strangulation. Richard said that the dog sat staring at Tina and eventually came over and started licking her. He didn't know how long it passed, but eventually he got up and carried on as normal. The coming days, he said, were a blur. He continued to paint himself as a distraught husband who was in shock after killing his wife in self-defense. But Sergeant Noonan told him straight. The digital evidence they had didn't match any of the stories he told. Noonan confronted him with financial evidence showing that he and Tina never had €26,000 to even stash in the attic. There was no way, based on their financial situation, that the money ever existed. In fact, it was him that spent all the money they had, falling for a scam. They showed him the emails and texts he'd sent in the hours after he murdered Tina, panicking that she was going to leave him over it. In fact, Tina was likely dead already when he sent the emails. His actions in the hours after her death proved he was attempting to cover up cold-blooded murder. It didn't stop there. Richard was shown the CCTV footage of him taking the dogs to the post office, when he said they were at home and he was in Dungarvan. And they knew what he was doing there, collecting Tina's dole money as if she was still alive. They also traced him standing completely still from 2 p.m. until 2:47 p.m. by the pier in Yall, just meters from where Tina lay dead on their living room floor. He said he stood at that pier and had considered throwing himself off of it that afternoon. But instead he returned home and held Tina's lifeless body through the night, kissing her head. He moved her to the sofa, where she stayed for almost 2 days. By then the dogs wouldn't leave her alone, so he dragged her body to the shed. He lifted her into their chest freezer. By that Friday, when he went to Fermoy to visit the family and the Garda station, Tina had been in the freezer for 2 days. Sometime over that weekend, he got a shovel and began digging a hole under the stairs. He didn't know how long it took, but his knuckles bled. That Sunday, he pulled her frozen body from the freezer and dragged her inside. It was Mother's Day. She was so heavy, he said. It was like trying to lift a 10-ton bag of coal. He laid her on the kitchen floor and wrapped her in a blanket. He then rolled her on top of the black plastic sheet they used for their car boot sales. He said he wrapped her in it because he didn't want her to get dirty, and he decided to bury her under the stairs so she could be close to him and not alone. He claimed he removed her wedding ring and put it in her pocket, but when examining her dressing gown, no ring was ever found. He then drove all over, looking for her favourite roses to bury her with, as she was, he said, his Irish rose. But because it was Mother's Day, all the roses were gone in the shops, so he bought 2 bunches of tulips instead. When he got home, he placed the tulips on top of her body and folded the plastic around her. He then carried her frozen body carefully and respectfully into the hole, saying, I didn't drop her into that hole. I had to make it as special as I could for her. I wanted her to know that the hand that killed her was also the hand that loved her. I wanted her to see I never truly meant any harm. He said he then poured concrete over the top of the hole and replaced the lino floor. Noonan told Richard that his description of her death made no sense and was most likely physically impossible. He pulled out 6 photographs. Richard said he didn't want to see them. He wanted to remember her as she was, not the way he had made her. Noonan told him they weren't photographs of Tina's body. They were of their home and life together, just so they could clarify his shifting account. Richard swore he'd given every detail. One of the photos was of the kitchen area and showed the back glass door of the house. Noonan asked whether Richard had replaced the glass in the door in 2017. He denied it. He also had no explanation as to how the 15 pieces of toughened glass got into Tina's hair and on her body. Richard went on and on, describing the relief that the truth was out. Although he admitted that he had caused her to die, he continued to claim that he was only defending himself against her violence. "I can't put it into words what happened," he said. "I should have just let her stab me. Let it be the end of me. I'm not a monster. I'm going to prison. There will be no jury because I'm going to plead guilty." Gardaí at last had the evidence they needed to formally charge Richard Satchwell with Tina's murder. It had been 6.5 years. When Sergeant Noonan read the charges, Satchwell said, "Guilty or not guilty? Guilty." He walked into the Cashel District Courthouse with his head down as he passed a large crowd of media. A tattoo, a love heart with the word Tina inside it, was visible on his arm. Over the following 2 days, vigils were held at Yall as well as Fermoy. Outside Tina's home, people lit candles and left photos, mementos and notes of love for Tina and her family. One note read, "You were so near all the time. Rest in peace now, Tina." Tina's devastated sister, Teresa, wrote on Facebook, "R.I.P. to my beautiful sister, Tina. You can rest now, love. We found you. I love and miss you. You are now with Mum. Fly high, my beautiful angel. Give Mum a big hug. You will always be with me." Yall's vigil was held at Mal's Beach, with over 200 people lining the beach wall looking over Yall Bay. Some brought their dogs to commemorate the woman that many of them would greet as she walked Heidi and Ruby through the community. Father Bill Birmingham spoke again to the mourners. He spoke about what Tina's neighbours had endured and read a message from the family, saying she would put a smile on everyone's face. She loved positivity. Everyone who loved and knew her will cherish the moments they spent with her. While awaiting trial, Richard Satchwell was kept in isolation and under strict observation at Limerick Prison. Although he had told Gardaí he would be pleading guilty and that there would be no need for a jury, on the day of his arraignment, he pleaded not guilty to the charge of murder. His legal defence was that he had killed Tina in self-defence and argued he was not legally represented at the time he made that comment to Gardaí and did not fully understand the distinction between murder and manslaughter. The prosecution's case, described to the 7 women and 5 men of the jury, was simple. Satchwell had murdered Tina sometime between the evening of the 19th and the morning of the 20th of March, 2017. It was a case of deliberate and ongoing deception, including a manufactured digital trail and the concealment of her body. He led Gardaí astray. He led the community astray. And he blatantly lied to Tina's family. Shamelessly. Brazen right up to the very end. They questioned how a 6'2" man claimed to have been attacked hundreds of times by petite, 8-stone Tina. The defence argued that although Satchwell lied, he'd engaged in disreputable conduct, but his actions did not equate to murder. They argued that Tina's death resulted from a fatal struggle following a violent row, and he was not a criminal mastermind. He adored and loved his wife. He worshipped her, they said. He knew things most husbands didn't know, like her clothes size and body measurements. The prosecution argued that this just showed how controlling and dangerously obsessive he was. Every day of the trial, Satchwell entered the courtroom surrounded by prison officers and rarely looked up, even when witnesses walked in front of him. At times he kept his hand over his face. Members of Tina's family were present every day, including Tina's birth mother. As the trial went on, more evidence was revealed. In addition to the months spent in jail in the early 2000s, Satchwell had 14 other convictions between 1999 and 2004. Larceny, checkbook fraud, theft, and public order. Although he had long claimed that he attended his GP in the 1990s after receiving scratches on his face at the hands of Tina, his GP testified that she had no record of him attending her medical practice in Fermoy in the 1990s with scratches on his face. She also said she kept meticulous medical records and could not corroborate any of his claims relating to visiting her. In the days after he buried Tina under the stairs, Satchwell texted Tina's cousin saying, "Do you want our big chest freezer?" She testified that she thought it was very unusual and strange. Following this, he placed a listing on Dundeal. Large chest freezer, free to take away, working perfect, just needs a clean. Giving away because I need the space. Witnesses described the strange, unnerving behaviour of Satchwell in the weeks and months after Tina's death. Within weeks, he began attending car boot sales on his own. When Tina wasn't by his side, many friends and acquaintances asked after her. He told some that she was ill and being cared for in hospital in England, after contracting a terrible infection. To others, he said she was in England visiting her sister. Everyone thought it was unusual that he was selling Tina's shoes and clothes, apparently to raise money to renovate their house. One witness described seeing Satchwell at a car boot sale in Blarney, where he was selling Tina's Dr. Martin boots. When she asked why, Satchwell told her that the house they'd bought had mould or fungus. He said Tina had gotten a very serious respiratory illness, and she wouldn't be at any car boot sales anymore. Tina's sister would describe him as controlling and odd. He used to call Tina a trophy. The court was shown 14 different media interviews Satchwell participated in during the first couple of years after Tina's death. Anyone who would indulge him, according to the prosecution. On May 27, 2025, the jury was told they must consider all the evidence, and when they returned, they had to be unanimous in their verdict. They could return with a verdict of either guilty of murder, not guilty of murder, but guilty of manslaughter, or not guilty. After several days, they reached a unanimous decision. Richard Satchwell was guilty of murder. As he had done every day of the trial, he hung his head. Tina's family finally had the chance to address the man who, for over 25 years, they believed had loved Tina and would never harm her. During an emotional victim impact statement, Tina's half-sister described Satchwell as a master manipulator, who for years had tortured them with the false hope that Tina would return, when all the while he knew he had killed her and buried her right under everyone's noses. She explicitly rejected Satchwell's claim that Tina was violent or mentally ill, telling the court, "Tina was not the person Richard tried to make her out to be. She was a kind, gentle, and loyal person." In Tina's cousin's statement, she said she would never get over the horror of Satchwell offering her the freezer he had only just removed her cousin's body from. Richard Satchwell was sentenced to mandatory life imprisonment in Limerick Prison. His defence team immediately appealed his murder conviction. His appeal is yet to be heard. Following the trial, the Garda Commissioner, Drew Harris, stated that a review of the 2017 investigation will be conducted. He said, "In hindsight, it may seem pretty obvious where her remains were being kept. We want to review that ourselves. We have the expertise within the organisation, and obviously then we will report on that to the Minister of Justice and to the Policing and Community Safety Authority." That review has yet to be completed. Thank you for listening to this episode of Lines of Inquiry. We have an Instagram page. If you're there, please give us a follow at Lines of Inquiry Podcast. We have an email address, linesofinquiry@goloudnow.com, and we would love to hear from you, so get in touch. Whether you have a story you think we should cover, or just to let us know how you felt about an episode. That email is linesofinquiry@goloudnow.com. If you're enjoying the podcast, leaving a rating or review really helps. We now have over 5,000 five-star ratings on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, and we are grateful for each one. Those responses make a real difference. They help new listeners find the series, and I am genuinely humbled by the response we've gotten. Thank you. Your support helps us to tell these stories. Make sure to like or follow the podcast in your podcast app, and hit the notifications button, so you'll know every time a new episode is released. Lines of Inquiry is presented by me, John Sweetman. The podcast is created by Darren Cleary. Our executive producer is Owen Brennan. Our producers are Siobhan Maguire and Siobhan Walsh. Sound editing and design is by Neil Kavanagh, with additional editing support from Ed Smith. This episode was written by Anna Priestland. The script editor was Owen Brennan. Social media, marketing, video and legal support comes from the Go Loud team. In the end, everything done in the dark comes to light.